Fear. It is a word which we all know but wish we didn't. We'd be better off having it stricken from our vocabulary along with the sensation it drags with it. When Googling fear, the definition that pops up is an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain, or a threat. Fear is like a virus. I'm sure that's something all of us understands thanks to the year that will not be named. Fear spreads, grasping hold of a group of people, or in some cases, a whole town. Sometimes the fear festers and cooks, rising to a boiling point until fear itself becomes dangerous. That is what happened one fateful evening in a town called Sleepy Hollow. My name is Adam Farmer, and welcome to Fiction Crime Time. The investigation into the letter I received at the end of Season 1 has caused me to look over strange disappearances throughout the years. And while my full investigation for Season 2 is not yet complete, I wanted to share a case that happened many years ago that remains unsolved to this day. It's a case which follows closely with the themes often present in this month of October, that of fear and all the spooks and bumps in the night that go with it. As I discussed in the intro, fear is powerful. In war, it's more powerful than the instruments which use that fear. I mean, look at the Cold War, a war not fought with guns or weapons, but simply with fear. Sometimes even the wielder of that fear is scared of it. Fear is an unstable element that people believe they can control yet cannot. Some end up insane or lose their heads. Today, I'm going to tell you a ghost story, not to fill you with fear, but to help you understand the fear felt by our victim in this crime. His name was Ichabod Crane, a man who disappeared in the fall of 1820. Before I get into any of my findings, we must go over who Ichabod Crane was, and the events surrounding his disappearance according to public record. Ichabod Crane was a schoolmaster who had arrived in Sleepy Hollow from Connecticut. Keep in mind, this was the time of localized schoolhouses and not modern schools that we know today. To the people in the rural town of Sleepy Hollow, Ichabod was fairly unique. Being a tall and lanky man, all he ever thought about was eating. And being a bachelor, he also had women on his mind. Specifically, one Katrina Van Tassel, if the local rumors are to be believed. Though, according to some records and journals I have found in my research, Ichabod wasn't exactly in love with Katrina. Some people believed he was only after the Van Tassel land. He was an imaginative and confident man, so much so that he pursued Katrina despite the protests of her other suitors. That was probably the reason for him being at the house of Van Tassel in the afternoon before his disappearance. Baltus Van Tassel was having a gathering of sorts that afternoon. Those present included many popular officials in the surrounding towns. Ichabod received an invitation because he was in good relations with the family because of his voice lessons for Katrina. Ichabod had rented a horse and saddle from the man he was staying with, Hans Van Ripper. I mainly add these details because the horse and its saddle are key pieces of evidence. Also at the party was Ichabod's rival, Abraham Van Brunt, known by many as Brom Bones. The public records don't exactly say why Ichabod stormed out of the party that night, but he left the party after the sun had set. He didn't show up at the schoolhouse the next morning. The horse he was riding was back at the gates of Van Ripper's stables without its saddle. When the search team went out, they found the saddle on the road. It had been trampled on by horse hooves. Further down the road, at the bridge next to the old church, the search team found Ichabod's hat, and next to it was a smashed pumpkin. There were rumors that circled around about what happened. That he simply left town after being rejected by Katrina Van Tassel. Or that he was taken away by the Headless Horseman, a legend in the town. But either way, the people of Sleepy Hollow never saw Ichabod Crane again. Now that is the skeleton of this case. As you can see, there are gaps which need to be filled. What caused Ichabod to leave that night? What happened on the road to the church? More importantly, what was he feeling that night? I feel as though I could already answer that question. Fear. Ichabod was full of fear. He filled his imaginative head with ghost stories. Normally, that would be seen as a deterrent to going out at night. Tell these stories to children so they won't wander out after bedtime. Psychological deterrence by fear. So, why did he break through that boundary that night? What made him face those ghosts and goblins that run rampant in the mind? That, my friends, is what I intend to find out. They say that the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow was a Hessian soldier, Germany's aide to the British in the Revolution. His head was lobbed off by a Patriot cannonball, and it is said that the ghost still travels the road in search of that head. I won't lie to you. While Sleepy Hollow hasn't changed since 1820, I still find myself jumping at shadows as I drive down the road. It seems as though I have caught the fear that is ever present in this quaint town. While modernization has taken hold of the town, it still remains to be a very tight-knit rural community, similar to what I'm used to in North Georgia. Some of the roads through the woods are still merely gravel, while most of the main roads are paved. The bridge, which was the site of Ichabod's disappearance, is still in place, though it had to be rebuilt in the late 60s after it collapsed following a rather strange sequence of events. The locals believed it was the spirits' reactions in relation to the city's transportation of the graves on the hill to another cemetery, because the old church land had been bought by developers. Now, in its place, stands a McDonald's, flanked by a Taco Bell and a Wells Fargo. It's kind of ironic, and sort of chilling when I cross the bridge, thinking about the disappearance, as well as the old Wells Fargo song. This situation gives it a new meaning. In this place, the lines that say, "The Wells Fargo wagon is coming down the street. Oh, please let it be for me." Sounds eerily a lot like, "Swing low, sweet chariot, coming forth to carry me home." Or sometimes it may not be a Wells Fargo wagon or a sweet chariot. Sometimes it could be an undead Hessian rider without a head who whisks me away into whatever comes next. And maybe that headless horseman is nothing more than a manifestation of fear, a mere phantom of the mind. Though, does that make him any less real? My first stop was a local library in hopes that they may have more records and journals for me to look at that I couldn't find online. With a few kind words to the librarian, and some healthy U.S. presidents in the donation box, I was able to gain access to what records the library had. I found some records about the Van Tassel family. Apparently, after Ichabod's disappearance, Katrina married Abraham Van Brunt, and they were left all the land and wealth of Baltus Van Tassel. It makes me wonder whether she made this decision to marry Van Brunt before or after Ichabod's disappearance. If it was before, then that may begin to explain why Ichabod left that evening. If it was after, then there may be a possibility of Abraham's involvement in his disappearance. The old cliche of getting rid of the competition. Though, more research was needed. So, I did it. took a lot of digging through many, and I mean many, stacks of old files, but I eventually found some old newspaper articles which mentioned the disappearance. Record of the Times, a newspaper based in Tarrytown, had many articles discussing the events. Headlines included, "School's Out, Teacher Gone Missing," "Headless Hessian Public Enemy Number One." One article that I couldn't help but chuckle at says, quote, "Here is the description of the suspect, tall, muscular, often seen riding a horse or without his head," end quote. I honestly wouldn't have expected anything less. I mean, a man disappears, and most believe he was whisked away by a local legend. Even the New York Herald got in on the action by having a political cartoon with President James Monroe standing next to the headless horseman. The caption reads, quote, "President Monroe finally found a worthy competitor. This opposing candidate is headless and thus has no vision for the future of our country. The race is on," end quote. This was during the end of the presidential election in 1820, where Monroe virtually won his re-election unopposed. The horseman was everywhere around the region of New York State, even in politics. But where was Ichabod Crane? Nowhere in those articles did I see any evidence of Ichabod resurfacing in some other town in New York, or even his body being found in the middle of nowhere. Sure, many articles had interviews with people who shared these theories, but none had definite proof. So, my first roadblock is reached. But luckily, there are other paths to take. When I was looking at the Van Tassel family records, I was able to find out that the old house of Baltus Van Tassel still stands out in the rolling hills just outside of Sleepy Hollow. Some of the Van Tassel Van Brunt descendants still own the house, though they don't live there anymore. They turned it into a sort of museum. They left a good friend in charge of the house when they moved away, and she has been the caretaker ever since. So, I gave the caretaker a call. She is a slightly stern woman named Clara Baker, and I made an appointment with her. She said that she was happy to help tell this story, and the owners gave their blessing. The only stipulation is that I couldn't make photocopies of anything or record an interview with her. I headed over there the next day. I cannot accurately describe to you all of what I felt seeing the old Van Tassel house. It was a fairly large house, painted white. It sort of made me feel like I was looking at Hill House. But in this story, the ghosts aren't confined to just the house. They roam the grounds and the surrounding countryside, tormenting and sometimes taking people along with them. The grounds weren't crowded with people. Sure, there were some visitors, but this is a small museum situated as a tourist attraction to anyone wanting to relive a small moment of history. Of course, the legends surrounding the area also bring with it some ghost hunters and enthusiasts. That was the first thing Mrs. Baker asked me when I first arrived, whether I was here to get spiritual readings or some other nonsense. I assured her that my purposes for this research were mostly of the mortal nature, though if they lead me to ghosts, I wouldn't be surprised. I told her the year I was investigating and the people involved. She led me into what used to be the library of the house, which was now turned into a sort of file room, as well as the museum's library. The ancient bookcases still remain full with volumes of work seeming to predate the American colonies. Mrs. Baker handed me a pair of gloves to prevent the oils from my skin from ruining the old pages that I may be handling in this room. She pointed me toward a large stack of files and journals. She told me to let her know if I needed anything else, and that the room was being monitored, so if I ruined anything inside, she would know. I was slightly intimidated by the files before me. I knew that I wouldn't get through it all in one day, so I took it piece by piece. At the beginning of this episode, I talked about fear and how it can spread. Fear has other powers as well. take the Horsemen of Sleepy Hollow, a local legend meant to keep kids from going out at night, a remnant of a vicious war, a reminder of how revenge can control a person even beyond the grave. These stories are told to the generations of people in Sleepy Hollow. Some believe it, and some don't. But even those who don't won't go out at night to find out. Like me, I don't particularly believe in ghosts. But I don't want to spend the night in a haunted house and be proven wrong. Those who believe in ghosts are afraid. And those who don't believe in ghosts are also afraid. Fear is the common factor. Some people say that if enough people believe in something hard enough, it becomes real. But I think, in the case of Sleepy Hollow, if enough people fear something hard enough, it becomes real. It was at least real to the Van Tassel family in 1820. Poring over the files and journals, I noticed that the Van Tassels have an abundant fear of the Headless Horseman. One cousin claims to have seen it far off at the top of a hill. Abraham Van Brunt said that he once raced it going down the road. Katrina Van Tassel claimed to have heard it riding down the road. She knew it was the horseman because of the otherworldly speed of the horse. To them, the horseman was real, and they were scared of it. I could tell as much from the slight difference in handwriting between the ordinary journal entries written in a calm hand and the entries talking about the horseman written with a shaky hand. So, is there a possibility that Ichabod Crane was whisked away by a headless horseman? After everything I've seen in Oz, I'm not ruling that out. I mean, look at Dorothy. A person who also disappeared without a trace. Maybe if I find Ichabod, I might find her. Maybe. I shift my focus away from the horseman. I thought I might need to answer some unanswered questions before I could draw some conclusions. I look into this little love triangle between Ichabod and Katrina and Abraham Van Brunt. To simplify it, Ichabod and Abraham both wanted to marry Katrina. According to Katrina's diary, she was in love with Abraham. She described Abraham's kindness towards her and his bravery. As of Ichabod, she thought very little. According to her entry on October 10, 1820, she described him as, quote, a silly, witty schoolmaster, end quote. There was very little about him in her diary. So, I'm a little confused, because the rumor was that Ichabod was one of the main competitors for Katrina's hand. But if he was, then surely she would think more of him. I pour over the rest of the files and find nothing more of Ichabod. There is simply one more entry in Katrina's diary, where she mentions the disappearance of the, quote, poor old schoolmaster, end quote. Katrina didn't love Ichabod, but how did Ichabod feel about her? Is this where the confusion lies? If Ichabod loved her, but she did not reciprocate that love, then maybe that was the reason for Ichabod's departure that night from the Van Tassel house. I look at Katrina's diary entry on October 31st of 1820, the night of Ichabod's disappearance. Everything began to start clicking together. That night, Abraham asked Katrina to marry him, and she said yes. In order to find out for certain what Ichabod's feelings were for Katrina, I have to find his journal. The articles and files make me believe that Ichabod kept a journal, but it has never resurfaced. Or, at least, been made public. I can only think of one place to find out. The Von Ripper used car dealership in downtown Sleepy Hollow. The owners are descendants of Hans Von Ripper, the man who Ichabod was staying with when he disappeared. His stuff would have been at the house when he disappeared, and Van Ripper possibly kept some things. Maybe it made it through the family line. Or at least they could help me find out what Hans von Ripper did with it. It took a while after arriving at the car lot to convince Abigail von Ripper that I was not interested in buying a car. Though she did almost have me sold on a 2001 Nissan Xterra SE. I told her of my interest in the Ichabod Crane case, and her demeanor changed. She told me of how Crane was a family legend. She invited me inside and made some coffee for the both of us. She told me her family's version of what happened that night. Ichabod rented one of Hans von Ripper's prized horses named Gunpowder so he could ride in style to the house of Baltus Van Tassel. The next morning, Gunpowder was pawing at the stable door without his rider and without his saddle. Hans was pretty upset about the saddle. They sent out a search party and eventually found the saddle, but not the man. Abigail seemed to firmly believe that it was the headless horseman who took Ichabod. When I asked her why, she opened a drawer and pulled out a small leather-bound journal. My heart began to race. It was Ichabod's journal. In it were all his teaching notes, personal entries, and theoretical discussions. But something about it sent chills down my spine. Abigail flipped to specific entries which were bookmarked. These entries discussed encounters with ghosts, witches, and the headless horseman. They started when he arrived in Sleepy Hollow, and began to increase in frequency up to the climax on the night of his disappearance. They seemed like ravings of a madman. September 20th entry. Quote, "They whisper in the night. The voices blow in through my window, though it remains sealed shut for fear of the voices. The witches are looking for a cat this night. They must have lost their familiar. Doors are locked. Salt lines the doorways. No way in and no way out." End quote. October 1st entry. Quote, "A screeching howl rolls through this night. I thought the new accommodations would clear me this fear, but to no avail. Cat. Cat. It's always a cat." End quote. October 9th entry. Quote, "Cat. Cat. Katrina. Yes, Katrina. It must be it. The spirits have spoken to my heart and my heart to listen. The horseman rides to send this message for the lovely Katrina. 'Tis not an omen of dread, though I remain fearful nonetheless." End quote. It continues in this manner, his love for Katrina being ordained by the spirits, and his fear of not earning her love and disappointing the spirits. So, Ichabod was not just in love with Katrina. He was fearfully obsessed. He believed he was doing the work of the spirits, and if he failed them, well, according to Abigail, I guess we know what happened. So the spirits had a hold of Ichabod, whether they be real or just psychological, merely phantoms of the mind. I don't know what would be more terrifying, the spirits being real or not being real. There is only one way to find out, and I know it's stupid, but I guess I have to go ghost hunting. I sat in my car in the parking lot of Wells Fargo looking down at the bridge. It is slightly lit in the darkness by streetlights on either side. I pulled in about an hour after sunset and had been sitting there ever since. I had no plan of action, no experience. The only plan was to show up and see what happened. Of course, the first few hours, I was fearful and cautious. Keep in mind what I said before. I don't particularly believe in ghosts, but I also don't often go out looking to be proven wrong. I sat in my car watching the businesses surrounding the street begin to close as the night went on. First, Taco Bell. Then the pizza place across the street. than the McDonald's. This one didn't have a 24-hour drive-through. Despite the streetlights remaining lit, the street began to get darker and more ominous. Something was happening. I don't know what, but I could feel that something was happening. It was a little after midnight when I heard the first noise. It caused me to jump and almost hit my head on the roof of my car. It was some ominous screeching sound. It sounded like the scream in a horror movie. It rang in my ears, piercing my eardrums. I may have even let out a startled shriek like one would after a jump scare in a horror movie. After I had recovered from the first heart attack from hearing that scream, my ears began to listen more closely. To my relief, it was only the call of a barn owl. I began to laugh at myself, but I also began thinking about what I said earlier about fear. Barn owls aren't particularly scary. In fact, they're my favorite birds ever since reading Catherine Lasky's Guardians of Gahul books as a kid. But when sitting in a car alone, after midnight, waiting for a ghost to come riding down the road, the fear begins to take hold. It transforms the call of this bird into the screech of a banshee flying to suck away my soul. Now, a normal person would just call it quits. Go back to the hotel room, take a bath, read a book, or watch a movie marathon. But I was a man in search of answers. So, of course, I grabbed my flashlight and got out of my car. I slowly began down the sidewalk to the bridge, jumping at shadows along the way. I was standing about 20 feet away from the bridge when I looked at it, taking it all in the moonlight. The bridge is an older style bridge with a wooden roof over it. The paint is starting to chip from exposure to the elements, but the bridge and its roof look stable. But in the moonlight, it looks like something from a Stephen King novel. I almost wouldn't be surprised if I looked under the bridge and saw a clown holding a balloon. Thankfully, when I did look under the bridge, I just saw the wide stream gently flowing under it. I then stepped onto the bridge. The bridge was around 50 feet long, but there were soft lights within it to keep it lit. I heard the screech again, and just like any repetitive jump scare, it got me. I reflexively turned my flashlight in the direction of the screech, and it landed on the face of a barn owl hiding in the rafters of the roof. I started laughing with relief at the sight of the bird, but I was stopped when I heard the whinnying of a horse in the distance. I froze there on the bridge, about halfway across. Did I just hear what I thought I heard? Then I heard it again. I looked off to the other side of the bridge and saw in the distance a silhouette. I was frozen with fear as I analyzed what my eyes saw in disbelief. It was a rider on his horse, and the rider had no head. Oh, and he was speeding in my direction. I quickly turned and began running. I ran track in high school, but it has been many years since then, and I would no longer consider myself what some call an athlete. I turned to look behind me, and the rider was barreling towards me at a rate that I never knew horses to do. As I was running, I was beginning to hear screeches and howls surrounding me. They sounded like no owl or creature of this world I've known before. I looked beside me, and I saw faces. Some smiling, some forlorn, some I saw in the papers in the library, in the obituary section. I turned to my pursuer, and he was getting closer, so close that I could see that he held something in his hand. It looked like a head. I quickly ran faster to the end of the bridge, but I felt resistance. Possibly it was the wind blowing against me, or it was the spirits grabbing hold of me. With my head bent down to the ground, I ran forward, trying to push myself as fast as I could to the end, to possible safety. All the while, I began feeling the hands on me, the spectral hands grabbing hold and refusing to let go. Some were saying words to me, but they were moaning and speaking all at once that I couldn't understand what was being said, only that I didn't want to hear any more. With slight joy and relief, I made it to the end of the bridge, and the spirits began to recede away from me, back into the shadows. I turned back to look at my pursuer, and he was upon me. The horse reared back its hind legs as the rider stabilized on its back. The rider held up the head in his hands and threw it as one would throw a baseball. I watched it barrel towards me, the spectral glow emanating from behind the skeletal eye sockets of the skull. I watched something in those eyes. At least I think I did. In that one moment, I could have seen anything in there. But when I looked at those eyes in that brief second, I saw a man. A very skinny and tall man crying out for help. I woke up in my car as the sun was beginning to crest over the horizon. I was breathing heavily and thinking, was it all just a dream? It had felt so real. The sights, the sounds, the sensations. Did it really happen? Or was it one of those phantoms of the mind? A ghost only made real by my fear of it. I'll never have a definite answer. Because whether what I saw was real or not, my fear was real. The fear took hold. It possibly gave me some answers. But some other answers are just not meant to be. Did I really see what I saw that night? Was it actually Ichabod who I saw in the eyes of that skull? Is his soul captured by the horseman forever? Maybe these aren't meant to be answered. But on the other hand, maybe they are. As I drove back over the bridge that morning, I saw two things. I saw the flashlight on the side of the road where I dropped it. And next to it, I saw a smashed pumpkin.